Hey everybody, welcome to this new format of our classes, where instead of having classes every 2 weeks that are on Zoom or in the office, I'm going to do them as a video format so I can film them during the day, take them and distribute them at night, etc. So I hope this works better for you. What it's going to allow us to do is cover more topics, a little bit more specifically, plus you'll have the information sent to you all the time so you can watch it at your leisure. What I ask from you, though, is to help me with topics. Let me know what you want to hear. I got a great list of things over here that people are starting to send to me. So if you want to hear me cover something, please say something because I'll be happy to do that for you. So what we're going to do today is we're going to jump into what's called the truth about Ozempic and Mounjaro. The truth with a little bit of my own opinion based off of what I've read and what I've seen and from case studies. But are they the miracle weight loss drug that they claim to be? By yours truly, Dr. Brady Weirich. I put this in. I probably shouldn't put this in. I was probably putting some negative energy out in the world or whatever. But I'm not a real doctor, as some of you have so kindly pointed out on social media. Although I will point out that most chiropractors actually get more pharmacology in chiropractic school than medical doctors get nutrition training while they're in medical school. So I'm just going to throw that out there when I say I'm not a real doctor. But given my, you know, almost 18 years of experience now in these fields, I think I'm okay to, or qualified. Let me rephrase that. I know I'm qualified to talk about these things. Now, I can't tell you to take drugs. I can't tell you to not take drugs. I'm going to share with you what I've read. And then you are free to decide what you want to do with your medical doctor. So that all said, let's dive in. Here's some statistics, if I can speak, that should scare you, but I'm sure they're not going to surprise you. The global obesity epidemic, according to the World Health Organization, which we have now learned is not a trustworthy source of information, but according to them, worldwide obesity has now tripled since 1975. Look around. That's no shock there. More than almost 2 billion adults, 18 and older, since 2016. And of these, almost 2 billion, 650 million were considered obese, which the difference between obese and overweight is, well, they make movies or TV shows about obese people. So 340 million children and adolescents from 5 to 19. That's scary. Obesity is linked to a higher risk of serious health conditions, including heart disease, stroke, type 2 diabetes, and certain types of cancers. I'd even change that to say all types of cancers. Economic burden, it's costing us billions of dollars, both tax money and money out of our own pockets for treatment. Obesity is associated with increased risks of premature death. Studies have shown that individuals with obesity have a higher mortality rate compared to those with a healthy weight. That's kind of a no-brainer statement. Obesity can lead to social stigma, discrimination, lower quality of life. The body positivity thing is a thing. It's a good thing, but you still need to do something about it. So it can also contribute to mental health, such as depression and anxiety. That's more of an inflammatory thing rather than the way you look, my opinion. Healthcare system works are strained worldwide in dealing with these issues. And I will tell you that bankruptcy for a lot of these healthcare systems, including the United States, is looming if we don't do something soon. Despite our best efforts to combat obesity, the rates continue to rise, and they pose a significant health challenge. And last but not least, obesity was the single biggest risk factor with mortality in COVID-19, just showing us we got to take better care of ourselves, because when that happens again, and it will, you're much higher risk of death if you're overweight. So something has to be done. I think we can all agree on that. We've got to do something. So I want to talk about my distrust of Big Pharma for just a minute. It's pretty deep rooted. I've always had it. In fact, it's one of the reasons why I became a chiropractor so many years ago, is because I just had this overall feeling of we are just flat out taking too many drugs. Here's a couple specific examples I want to share with you now. In 1980, we passed something there called the Bayh-Dole Act. I encourage you to look this up. The Bayh-Dole Act actually makes it legal for Big Pharma to pay the researchers that are in the National Institute of Health for their research. Hey, that is a conflict of interest. I realize that the money has to come from somewhere, but for a company to pay the government or workers in the government for their findings on their product so they could sell their product, especially when it comes to health, ought to concern the living daylights out of you like it does me. The other thing I'm going to point out here is this study in the middle of your screen. This is a two-year effect of semaglutide, which is what we're going to talk about today in adults. And this study painted a very rosy picture on what's happening with Ozempic and how people are getting better, which they are. But this article is very, very positive. But if you flip over to the conflict of interest statement from that same company or that same article, you will find that Ozempic, the people who made Ozempic, actually paid for the article. So you look at things like this, and given the fact that Big Pharma has paid billions of dollars in criminal fines to the Department of Justice, even in the last 20 years, they've been shelling cash out, and we just never hear about it because the government keeps fining them for things like lying to the public. They own and manipulate their own data. I don't trust them. This is why. So when this whole Ozempic thing came around or started becoming more and more popular, yes, it was a threat to me, right? Because it's a competitor in the weight loss space. So I was already a little bit on guard. My stance on it has softened a little bit, and I think you'll see that as this goes on. So what's the definition of insanity? Apparently, Albert Einstein said this. Who really knows if that's true or not? But insanity is doing the same thing over and over and expecting a different result. So with that in mind, I want you to ask yourself the question, how many chronic diseases have been cured in the last 40 years? The answer is zero. We haven't done anything. All the chronic diseases that are still causing death in the United States are getting worse. We haven't fixed anything yet. Hey, how has the top 10 causes of death changed in the last 40 years? 10 to 20% of the top 10 have changed here and there. For example, 2020, obviously COVID snuck its way in there. But for the most part, they're all chronic diseases that are preventable, that we can do something about. Yet the pharmaceutical companies still just want to throw drugs at it and try to fix it. And doing that hasn't changed anything. So with that in mind, for the pharmaceutical companies to come out and say, we can cure obesity, I think they're just, they're doing the same thing over and over again. So, but with these medications, there are the good, the bad, and the ugly. We're going to try to cover some of those today. I'm going to tell you from clinically, I've seen patients come into my office that have been on these medications. They reacted poorly to them. They didn't get results. And they finally got results and made huge changes with what we were working with them. On the flip side of that, I have dear friends of mine that have gone on these medications and it's been absolutely life-changing for them. So that's the good and the bad. And the ugly is some of the side effects that are associated with them. We'll dig into those a little bit more. So let's go. Basic physiology. When you feel hungry, hey, hunger is primarily regulated by part of your brain called your hypothalamus. It receives signals from all sorts of hormones and neurotransmitters in your body and releases something called ghrelin, known as the hunger hormone, which gives you those hunger feelings. So what do you do when you feel hungry? You go eat. When you eat, it enters your digestive system. It gets broken down into smaller and smaller molecules, and as food passes through your digestive tract, there's hormones that help regulate nutrient absorption, digestion, etc. And specifically, the ones we're going to talk about today are this gastric inhibitory peptide, or GIP, and glucagon-like peptide -1, GLP-1. That's the two hormones that these two drugs affect. So that's what we're going to be talking about today. Insulin's released. So after you eat, your blood sugar levels rise. Insulin's released, so the insulin gets into the cell. So that insulin is actually coming from your pancreas, and that plays a key role in uptaking amino acids, protein synthesis, release of glucose, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So let's jump into Ozempic and Mounjaro. Hey, Ozempic, its other name is semaglutide. Mounjaro is terzepatide. Whoever names these needs to be fired. Can't we just find something that we all know what the word means? Anyway, that's neither here nor there. So both of these are peptides, which I'm going to define peptides in a second. But what's really interesting is because these are peptides, these being peptides, basically what the pharmaceutical company did is they figured out that they're just little chunks of amino acids. They figured out ways to patent them, slap labels on them, and then sell them to you as Ozempic and Mounjaro, when in reality, they should be available as amino acids. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. That's the profit part of this. Peptides. What is a peptide? Peptides are short chain amino acids. They are the building blocks of proteins. And they typically consist of fewer than 50 amino acids. More than that will actually form a protein. And are formed when amino acids are linked together by peptide bonds. That's just the little links between each one of these peptides. Peptides play various roles in biological systems, serving as signal molecules, hormones, neurotransmitters, and components of enzymes and receptors, etc. They're involved in a wide range of physiologic processes, including cell signaling, metabolism, immune system, and tissue repair. Or in this case, it has to do with insulin, slowing digestion, etc. So both of these medications, or peptides, if you want to call them that, are going to upregulate insulin secretion. They're going to slow down digestion and make you feel full, and it helps you better regulate blood sugar. That's how these medications work. So, Ozempic, let's talk about it. Ozempic is a peptide that stimulates the production of GLP-1. We've already talked about that. That GLP-1 is going to come from your pancreas. GLP-1 regulates blood sugar by promoting insulin secretion. So when your body releases GLP-1, it tells your body to produce more insulin. That's how it works. So basically the medication is saying, hey, we need more GLP-1. So GLP-1 helps you produce more insulin. And by doing that, it helps reduce your blood sugar. You're not going to get a glucagon release, which is why it's called GLP-1 in the first place. But it's going to slow down your stomach actually emptying itself so you feel full longer. On the flip side of that, Ozempic has been associated with nausea, vomiting, diarrhea, pancreatitis. In fact, the FDA, I want to say 6 months ago, finally told the makers of Ozempic to put gastric paralysis on the actual warning label as one of the side effects. But just so you know, that happened. Versus Mounjaro or tirzepatide, it's a peptide that activates both GLP-1 that we talked about and the GIP receptors. So it's going to work on two different receptors versus just one. So it helps regulate blood sugar by promoting insulin secretion, just like Ozempic does. It inhibits glucagon release, which regulates your blood sugar, which is a good thing. It slows down gastric emptying, and it promotes the feeling of fullness after your meals, just like Ozempic. But I feel like this one's a little bit more thorough. It's a more comprehensive approach to Ozempic to blood sugar management, can lead to improved glycemic control in individuals that have type 2 diabetes. And research has shown us that people are losing weight as a result of this medication. So the main difference between Ozempic and Mounjaro is Ozempic is going to work only on GLP-1, whereas Mounjaro is going to work on both GLP-1 and GIP. So that's the big difference there. The end result is basically the same. The side effects are a little bit different. This one can include nausea, too low of blood sugar, potentially thyroid cancer. So there you go. So in my opinion, based off what I've seen, both clinically and the things that I've read, I will say this. Do not take these medications if you're just going to keep eating the same way. I hate seeing people go on these and just, instead of going to the fast food restaurant for, you know, a couple going to the fast food restaurant, each getting their own meal, they get one meal and split it. As soon as you come off that medication, all bets are off. You're still eating the same inflammatory crap. Don't take these if that's what your intentions are. Okay? We're actually going to offer these medications in our office. Let me back up. I'm offering these medications as just a standalone is actually wrong. I don't think that's right. Hey, I think that's just going to keep adding fuel to the fire. If all you're offering, like these, for example, these ads on Facebook where people say you can, you know, mail these to you, it's just a money grab. All they're doing is sending you the medication and that's it. I don't think that's right. Okay. But after reading up on these two options, I do feel like tirzepatide is better than Ozempic. Okay. And we are going to offer both of these in our office. But only if you're either part of the metabolic reset program and it has failed, or if you're willing to sign an affidavit saying you're willing to make change. We'll provide you with the information and changes that you need to make, but I'm dead serious. We're not going to offer these if you're intention is to just keep eating the same things and just take the medications because you think it's going to fix you. So I do want to offer you some alternatives here. Hey, obviously eating a natural whole food diet, which in the blog post, I actually put some recommendations in there, or the people that are on my list, they already have, you know, all of our food recommendations. But here's some other alternatives. The lipotropic drops can actually be an alternative to these meds. And the reason for that is the lipotropic drops actually help your body regulate insulin better. And so your cells are more sensitive to insulin. You don't need to release more insulin. Your cells are just more sensitive to it. And that's why they make you feel less hungry. So they are actually an alternative. Berberine is a compound that's found in several plants, golden seal and barberry. The people are actually calling this nature's metformin because it helps improve insulin sensitivity and lowers blood sugar levels. I do want to say this, even with the lipotropic drops, doing these just by themselves is not going to be as effective, right? You've got to make the dietary changes with lipotropic drops, with the berberine. They can help. And with everything else we've talked about, by the way, they can help, but as a standalone without many changes, they're not going to help as much. Cinnamon actually increases insulin sensitivity, lowers blood sugar. Alpha lipoic acid is an antioxidant that improves insulin sensitivity and reduces oxidative stress, which is huge. That's why you see alpha lipoic acid in a lot of neuropathy supplements, including Nerve Reverse, the one I like. Chromium is a mineral that plays a role in glucose metabolism. Again, studies are showing that it's increasing insulin sensitivity and lower blood sugar levels. Magnesium, that's a great one for helps with impaired glucose metabolism. Omega-3 fatty acids, I've got some exciting stuff to tell you soon about krill oil supplementation. I found one that I like, that I trust. But that can reduce inflammation, improve insulin sensitivity. Vitamin D, I think vitamin D more focuses on the autoimmune portions of blood sugar regulation and diabetic complications. That's been a huge one. And then, of course, exercise and diet. The more you move, the better off you're going to be. And then I won't take time to talk about diet because we've already touched on that one. So that's it. That's the big differences between Ozempic and Mounjaro. You now know what they are. You now know that they're an option, but they're options if you're only willing to make change. I appreciate you spending some time watching this with me. You could really help me out if you'd please like and share this video. Don't be afraid to text links to your friends, share it on social media. I would really appreciate it. It helps me out a ton. You guys are awesome. We're going to keep these videos coming. I love you. Keep sending me recommendations or ideas. So thanks so much.